This is the Be Positive podcast in association with Cork's Red FM. My name is Eimear Romani and I'm one half of the Life Hustle Project. We're using social media for social good to uplift and inspire and to present a more realistic, authentic viewpoint of everyday life and topics through social media. This episode, I've been so excited. I say that about every episode, but I really have been excited about this one because this is the Be Funny podcast. So yeah, turn it on, put on the kettle, turn this up and enjoy, because I know we're going to have a few giggles along the way here. We've never needed comedy so much. We've never needed escapism so much. And I really, even after the podcast last week about careers, maybe in the more creative field, in artistic fields, in fields that don't follow academia as such, we want to give people a little bit of hope out there if they're not really into what they're doing in school or college at the moment. Things work out. Everything does work out in the end. You just have to have a bit of faith and do what you love. So this is the Be Funny side of things. And I'm sure we're going to talk about all of our funny career paths along the way. But I do have some of my favourite people in the studio here to do that this evening. We have the team from Cahoots.
Cahoots, bring funny, in the no? funny. Yeah, I feel gas.
So we have Laura, Tyke and Dominic here. Thank you so much for joining me, guys. It's so cool to have you all here in the studio.
Welcome. Our pleasure.
Thank you. So first question, and I guess this is something I still don't know what I want to be when I grow up. But you guys, this is such a different career path for anyone to walk into. Did you know what you wanted to be, Laura, first when you were small?
I can pinpoint it almost to the moment.
No way.
I totally can. Was when I was in second class in primary school and I had this amazing teacher, Mrs. Horgan, who dramatised everything, including long division. So I remember like literally people carrying the one, like so she'd have us picking each other up and moving the one and all this, which was brilliant. Now it didn't make me a mathematician though, because I'm not so strong on the maths. Okay. But at that moment I was
like,
good
at carrying people.
I decided I'd be a beast. A burden. No, I decided that, what is this cool thing? Don't be laughing. This is my career path. But I was like, oh my God, acting, amazing. And I never changed from that moment. The type of acting maybe changed.
Okay.
But I definitely was like, this is for me
okay.
forever. And I think maybe people thought, oh, she'll grow out of it.
Okay.
But I never did.
Oh, interesting. Tyke.
We can all say whatever we want, like.
Whatever, Trevor. Go for
What's
it.
On your mind, love?
Well, like, I suppose where I decided to go into comedy, like, was definitely a moment for me as well, but I was on mushrooms, like, is it okay, to say that?
Go for it.
Like, up until mushrooms experience, I was kind of like, I wanted to be like,
you're actually a priest.
Yeah, totally. Laura will testify to this, because I, up until about 21, 22, I took myself very seriously. Like, I thought I was, like, going to be a really important, maybe politician or social change type.
Okay.
Or maybe the next Jim Morrison, or like really interesting poet or something. And then like one that I
now
was
stop
on
right there, because that what? Whole that whole mishmash of titles. Did you really know what you wanted to be?
No, but I thought it was going to be something serious. I thought I was going to be like an important person.
Okay.
Do you know?
Okay.
Very important.
Are we all important to someone?
Yeah. And so then I was just like, one night I was just on mushrooms and I just thought like, nosh, my life is ridiculous. Like, and like, life generally is ridiculous, and then am I going to regret saying this?
No.
We can cut it all out.
Cut it all out. No. Cut it through, yeah.
We can cut it out. But it's about the authenticity. So look, you know, we have enough filtering going on in our lives on social media and everything. So this is, you know, filterless for now, I think. Okay. And Dom?
Well, obviously, I was on quite a different path up on... Sorry, is that funny, Tyke? Did I say something funny? No, I don't think I did. I was studying science in UCC. I was studying microbiology, and Laura was part of the process of me changing my career.
Really? Finally, he acknowledges this.
Tell me.
You wouldn't acknowledge this in any of your like, TV3,
well, it's
would
never
you?
Come up before, Laura, so that's why I haven't acknowledged it.
I've been bringing it up for about 10 years.
I joined the Drama Society in UCC, and I'd never done any acting before that, and the first play that I ever auditioned for was directed by Laura, beside me here.
And also my other best friend, Laura.
Who's also called Laura.
Yes.
Okay. The two Lauras.
I did a terrible audition.
Awful.
Yeah.
We only... terrible.
I think Laura's playing up how bad it was.
Was this your first audition ever?
For anything. Yeah. Okay. I was a bit nervous.
We picked him because he was beautiful.
So did you just literally walk up to him and say, hey, be in my play?
No, I'd say we put up signs saying we thought we were gas, we called ourselves the two Lauras because there was two of us. We thought we were the two Ronnies and we still kind of do. So we put up signs and Dom just came to an audition.
Well, I was actually there with my friend, Sean Flood.
Oh yeah, yeah. Who also got cast.
Yeah.
Oh,
okay.
For different reasons.
Yeah, absolutely.
But he did a very good audition.
For acting reasons, he got cast. Yeah.
But so Dom, when he left, we were like, ooh, not a great audition. He's beautiful though. And we would like to spend time with him. Okay. So that's why he got
cast. Yeah.
And but then, turns out he was brilliant.
Aesthetically, so.
Yeah.
That's what got me in the door. And then I did about a dozen shows while I was in college. And I decided about three quarters of the way through the degree that I would want to try it professionally.
Okay.
So then I graduated and that's what I've been doing since.
Okay.
Yeah. But you can still get a load of pictures of him as a scientist if you put in stock photos scientist into Google.
Again, that's for different reasons.
I may know about that.
And I will actually attribute some of that blame to you, in fact.
Yes, so, okay. Yeah. I do take that on board, okay. To be fair.
In fact, my WhatsApp group with my soccer team, I get at least kind of one picture a week of me as a scientist or in a call centre or as a doctor.
And to explain, that's because Dominic has actually done some stock bite photo modelling for us at the agency. Which actually, you know what, I really relate to having worked in fields myself where, you know, maybe what you love doesn't put bread on the table at the start.
Definitely.
It's so easy to just kick that aside and to let maybe parents, peers, life in general kind of make you go, you know what, maybe I can't do that. My husband is a playwright and an actor as well, and he's still... You know, he at some stage he was like, okay, I've got kids now, I'm married, I'm going to have a real job. And it kind of does annoy me a little bit that, you know, maybe it's because our population is smaller and the funding isn't there nationally, but not everyone is lucky enough to get to do what they love.
And we all had to kind of do our jobs on the way. That I was Mrs. Claus in Douglas Shopping Centre. And
love
I was
that.
Like, this is not ideal.
I love it.
But, and mainly my job was to sell cups. Do you know, don't mind the Santa experience. It was like, do they want a cup? And nobody wanted a cup. So I was very bad at my job. But you know, we've all done the ones that you're like, oh God, it's vaguely connected to acting, I'll do it.
I know, but doesn't it kind of, like, I think when you find something that you do love, then you don't mind doing that other thing so much because you're more invested in what your passion is. So you're like, okay, look, I have to, like, even myself and Viv, when we opened the agency 10 years ago, when the recession hit, we just went to a recruitment agency one day. We're like, I'll turn my hand to anything. Just give me a job for a while so that the company survives. And I think once you're doing something you love, you're just going to keep doing it.
I think as long as you don't lose track of what the overall game plan is for me anyway, because I worked a load of different jobs, and as long as I had it in the back of my head, well, you're only doing this as a way to provide you with money to buy you time to do what
you love.
To do.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
And then I got to the stage where I didn't have to do any of those jobs anymore, which is fantastic.
Okay.
Yeah, I was working in Liam Russell's bookshop, which is sadly now gone.
I know, I'm so sad that's closing down.
I worked there for 10 years on and off, and I remember coming home one night and crying over an invoice, and I thought to myself, this is ridiculous. Like, I'm not crying over my passion here as much as it was a lovely place to work. I realised that maybe working there was stopping me from chasing other stuff because I had it as a safety net. Mm. So I pulled the safety net out from under myself and it kind of checked with my husband and my mom if that was an okay thing to do.
Yes.
And then that kind of forced me to go after jobs that I wanted then, I suppose.
Do you think, guys, maybe that at the moment society places such a huge value on the end goal and it's more academic at the moment in that it's all about where I'm going to get and what I'll do when I get there. But is all the learning not in the journey and, you know, the ups and downs and the challenges along the way, especially in your industry?
I think I might have been lucky as well that I was brought up to just not, there was no pressure on me to do anything really.
So you were just allowed to be yourself?
A little bit I don't know, it was I suppose we're lucky enough to be living in a country where we're probably not going to starve, if we kind of pursue the thing that we're, a lot of people don't have that luxury.
Yeah.
We're in a country where we can actually kind of do it. And then another thing as well is people will often say to you fair play to you for sticking with it kind of thing, as if you just plucked this profession out of a book and said, right, I'm sticking with this stoically now no matter what. Whereas I couldn't possibly do anything else other than something to do with comedy.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? You can't do anything else because you just wouldn't function or something. I know that sounds a bit pretentious, but I couldn't give comedy up and then say, you know, turn around and try and be an accountant because I wouldn't be any good at that. Like.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I think you'd be a good accountant.
You'd be a great accountant. You'd be entertaining. You'd be terrible with numbers.
A funny accountant.
Yeah. He just thought that my finances were gas. but I think as well, if you're only focused on the end result, well, surely the end result is the end. You're like 80 and looking back.
And it's over.
And going, well, that was great. Now I've finally reached the final level.
Yeah.
Like, whereas as you go along the way, I think I realise that more as I get older, that this is life. Do you know that there isn't like a... And then now when I'm older and I have all that, I'll do this. But it's like, but I'm getting older all the time along and this is every day is part of...
Yes.
That doesn't make much sense, but it makes sense
in
my brain.
I think it's a conscious effort though. I think you have to actually check yourself and say, are you enjoying yourself right now? And if you are, then there is no end goal. You've achieved exactly what you want. You're enjoying every day for what it is. And that's definitely all my only goal. I always describe myself as being micro-ambitious. I never set like... Major goals ahead. I'm just focusing on today, and
but that's probably mindfulness.
I don't tell you.
You know, I'm
like checking in here, going, "Hang on a minute."
Micro-ambitious. We'll have to get him out of the group.
Well, you never asked.
Micro-ambitious.
You never asked.
Does anyone have
an answer? You're not a reader.
It's probably mindfulness. I'm not a big fan of mindfulness generally.
Yes, it is.
But that's what it is, isn't it?
It's stopping yourself thinking too far ahead or spending too much time looking backwards. Either
being in the now. Yeah.
There's this amazing child psychologist called David Carey. He's usually on News Talk, and he
can he come to my house. Please.
I really want, I know I've asked him so many times, he keeps promising that he would, but he said something like, don't borrow worries from the future for today. And I really like that because I'm texting into him going like, what will I do when my child goes to college, and my child is like three. And he's like, you're grand a while.
I know.
Steady at the wheel.
Bit of perspective.
Totally.
Of course. So how did you get into comedy day one? So
who's going there now first?
Our spiritual leader.
Okay.
That's Tyke.
Come on,
Tyke.
Yeah. All right.
Spill the beans. You write Tyke as well.
I write, I've written most of the stuff that we do. Well, we devise stuff together, but I'll kind of put it on paper.
Kind of just woke up one day and went, you know what, I'm going to put a bit of pen to paper here?
I think I'd always written, I'd always got a buzz off being, when I was in school, I used to if I wrote an essay, the other boys in the class would try and get the teacher to get me to read out my essay. Remember that from being, just because mine would be off the wall, not that it was particularly good, and I wouldn't do very well in terms of the results, but it would just get laughs, and then I was addicted to getting laughs. I know it all sounds kind of cliche now,
but it is true.
And I suppose my first kind of thing of I could do comedy was when I was in school, I was really fat and didn't really make friends very quickly when I first went to school. And then as soon as I started sitting in the corridors, whatever, in my first second or third lunch break, I was just saying stuff, and then there was two or three people listening to what I was saying.
Okay.
And then by the end of the week, another guy who went into the school were like, do you realise there's a crowd of people?
It's a bit like how Jesus started out, I think. his preaching.
Seven or eight guys. And I wouldn't even be talking. I'd just be eating my sandwich, and every now and then I'd say something and it'd be a little titters because everyone was just new and trying to find themselves.
Okay.
So it's I could be a comedy guy.
This is a thing.
This is a thing. It just occurred to me then or whatever. And then it takes years, I think, to have the courage to kind of go, I want to do this and I'm confident enough to try it and maybe fail at it.
Okay,
that's
brilliant.
That's a huge thing, I think. Yeah.
And also the fact, leading back again to the fact that you came from a household where you were allowed to be you and it wasn't projected onto you to be anything else.
No.
You know, that you could just do your own thing is pretty cool as well.
Yeah.
And a lot of the reason you're probably doing what you're doing. Laura, what's it like to stand up in front of an audience of people live and hope to get laughs?
It is probably very scary when it's a stand-up gig. Do you know, if you're doing a play or something, you get accidental laughs.
Yes.
Whereas with a stand-up, you're I remember doing a really serious play and the director pulled me aside and she said, will you please stop making my serious play into a pantomime? I was like, whoops. But I think when there's people going to a comedy gig specifically to laugh, that's a bit more of a pressure.
Okay.
And I remember for years I was like, I'm going to do stand-up.
Okay.
And I just kept saying it, but I hadn't anything written. I was just kind of saying this is something I wanted to do. And then eventually I was like, I better do it. And
I imagine it must be petrifying.
Well, I did pack out the first audience with all of my lovely chums. Aww, it was like the warmest audience ever. Just not family. My family, my mom and dad are so supportive, but they were petrified to come see me do stand up. And they've only seen it recently. So it's very scary, but you get the first laugh. And we were talking about this recently, me and Tyke, that you have to trust your material. Like, okay. If you're in your own head going, oh God, nobody laughed at that, then you're suddenly gone into your head.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're judging yourself and you're leaving out your best jokes and all this. You just have to power ahead and trust that, look, you're gas in everyday life. You know your material is funny. You know nobody else is doing your style of material. And so you just have to go for it. And then I think in many ways I thought being a girl comedian would be like harder,
okay,
but I'm able to get away with more because I wander up, I have a little, usually a little bow in my hair, I look absolutely adorable, and then I can say desperate things and get away with it.
Brilliant.
It's a rare skill.
That is brilliant. And so Dom, you kind of, did you find your way into comedy through acting? Or,
well, I still don't think I'm in comedy, if you know what I mean.
Okay. That, the accidental comedian.
Well, in the context, no. Well, in the context of Cahoots, I would class Laura and Tyga as the funny ones, and I'm kind of the one who keeps things ticking over when it comes to, we'll say, our sketches, or when it comes to the TV series.
Okay, I disagree with that more. Now, okay. Okay.
Well, I suppose that's just how I feel, and even with things like, because Laura and I work on a show, and Tyga worked on it before in the past called the Improv Panto.
Yes.
And I always figured that my role was more kind of to keep the storyline ticking along, and every now and again I would say something interesting as opposed to funny. And particularly when I did stand up as well twice.
Laura and Tyga, like, no.
I suppose this is the way I see it anyway.
Well, you're wrong.
Okay,
so.
All right. But I did stand up twice, and I figured my main objective wasn't to make them laugh. I wasn't trying to do that. I was just trying to be interesting.
Okay.
And there were laughs, but again, I was thinking it was more kind of, isn't it funny how his mind works, as opposed to, that's really, really funny.
For the skits. Like,
exactly.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. But okay. I suppose that in a sense is a style of humour, I think.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And how did you all get together? How did Cahoots get started?
We met each other in like various capacities over the years. Like, I knew of Tyga.
The circuit in Cork isn't that small.
Well, this is it. We kind of, I think I always thought that you were a good bit older than me, Tyga, but he's not. Because I was
a few years older than you.
He looks quite old. Yeah. You do look quite old.
I'd be haggard.
He's very shy.
He's seen things like
bestie in life. Yeah. Like.
It's the mushrooms.
Mushrooms.
It's a lot of mushrooms.
The only mushrooms I ever had were in the the only mushrooms I ever had were in the stir fry, and they were delicious. Tyga was being Jesus, and I've told the story 17,000 times. Tyga was being Jesus and Jesus Christ Superstar in the Honan, and I was in transition year. My sister brought me to see it. So he was up on the cross, and I was like, oh, as your man on the cross, isn't he beautiful? And then I met him a couple of years later when he was in that serious phase, and I was in a bit of a notions phase as well.
Okay, great.
And I directed this really serious rehearsed reading of a play. I thought I was so innovative because the two actors just sat on swivel chairs. I was like, ooh, wow, this is
serious.
This nice. Is mind-blowing stuff. And again, we had no crack whatsoever. And I knew Dom, and then me and Tyga bumped into each other outside Tesco's on Paul Street, and
you,
we had a big,
me on to do stand-up,
we had
actually
a big chat about stand-up. Yeah. It was, okay, I was just after starting, and I was going, doing So You Think You're Funny in Dublin, or maybe I'd gotten through the semi-final, I don't know, but we just started talking about it, and then it was kind of the Ronanism promo as well. There was just a kind of a right time, right place, right time for us all, I think.
Well, okay. I'd seen you a couple of times. I wanted to definitely put a group together. And like, I'd seen you live a couple of times, and I'd seen Dom, and I just thought it was, because they're both hilarious in completely different ways.
Yeah.
And I just thought like putting a group together as well, I just couldn't understand how most sketch groups didn't have a girl. Just
okay,
blew
yeah,
my
yeah.
mind.
Yeah.
And Laura was like the funniest girl I'd seen.
And you just can't imagine the dynamics without Laura.
Yeah.
It's just crazy.
Gives you more options of material.
I've never understood
material.
Why they do it. Yeah.
Yes.
Because like, every now and then, if a guy's being a girl, unless you're Monty Python or something.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, of course.
Like, I just don't feel most groups get away with not having a girl, let alone one so versatile and strong and stuff. So, And then
Tears.
Dom is like,
tell him what we were originally called.
Splurge.
Splurge was our original name. We didn't run with it ultimately.
Just got one gig, we went to Body and Soul, and
Splurge.
Interesting time there.
Yeah.
I do
remember we were all kind of extras on an episode of a hidden camera show called The Fear.
Oh yeah? Okay.
And we were running around town wearing blue jumpsuits. And I don't think I've laughed as much in one, like, we were exhausted by lunchtime because we were just making each other laugh the entire
that's
morning.
That's the best.
And, that was it.
That kind of clicked
in
my head there that, you know, these are both nice people to spend time with, but also there's a kind of a comedic chemistry between us that's worth pursuing.
That was where I'll Go With You kind of originated, because Tyga spent the day interrupting me and Dom going like, what are you doing?
What are you doing for lunch?
Can I go with you?
Yeah, and we kind of make up, actually, no, we might just go ourselves. Oh, sure, I'll come along anyway.
The shadow
exactly,
appears.
Totally.
Just the excitement, though, of working with each other. Like, me and Tyga had a stand-up gig down in Kenmare. Not Kenmare. Listowel in a place called Mike the Pies.
Mike,
and we just spent the whole journey home. We were wrecked. We spent the whole journey home roaring, laughing. By the time we got out of the car, my ears were just ringing. And really, all we did was shout Mike the Pies at each other. For the whole way home. Be wrecked.
Oh, I love it. Tell me, Storyland then, what kind of a positive platform was that for you to kind of get the brand, we'll call it, out there?
I'd say coming up to Storyland, I was then thinking about it the other day, I was kind of on the verge of throwing the towel in, to be honest. Yeah, well, like throwing the professional towel in. I was still going to do comedy, but I was kind of starting to think, like, I don't know what's going to work out. Maybe because I was like, at that point as well, I was thinking acting. Like, why aren't I getting more gigs? Am I going to make a living on, like, I have a daughter as well, like, you know.
Okay.
And, like, you know, when you have kids, it just kind of, you know, you just can't quite be as, it'll happen anytime, you know, yourself. But then Storyland, yes, we put in a project for Storyland and it kind of happened. And from there on in, really, then there's just been this kind of little path has kind of, we've created for ourselves, I think.
And
it
we
was
were
a great
just,
platform, yeah, it was great.
We were just talking there about how great it is to see, like, not Dublin-centric TV on at the moment. There's a lot of Cork faces.
Joking.
Are you okay?
Right.
Pause.
Her pants are destroyed. She's choking on water. Yeah.
It's been quite the day.
She's fine. All right, girl.
Get it out of you. Come on. It's all right.
Poor child. She's getting battered.
I've been teared out. Everything coming down my eye.
The emotion of it all.
It's like having two big brothers all the time.
You're right,
you're fine. You're
get
fine.
Away.
Flush your head fine.
So, yeah. So, it's great to see a lot of Cork on our national broadcaster, you know. And do you guys get stopped a lot, Dom? You must with the Young Offenders as well.
Yeah, I would get stopped quite a lot for the school too, which is nice.
Yes, brilliant. But
go on, Dom.
Actually, can I ask you?
Tig wrote that. Yeah.
Peter Foot or Tig, who's better to work with? Joking.
You should answer.
You don't have
to. I'm going to respectfully say that they are both extremely talented at what they do, and I love working with both of them.
Very diplomatic answer.
Yeah. I do get recognised quite a bit in Cork particularly, and because I don't drive, I take the bus quite a lot.
Okay.
So I get recognised on the bus all the time.
Did you ever learn how to drive?
I am learning. My first lesson is next Monday.
Oh, geez.
So stick that in your pipe.
Go on.
Go on, Dom. 17 years of this.
But people are lovely, and I've only ever gotten positive things from people. Like, they just want to photograph, or they just want to say how much they enjoy the shows or whatever it is. So
brilliant.
It's lovely,
and,
yeah.
Like, I enjoyed the school so much, and it was I was actually only saying to Timmy, like, I probably won't even run this, but I was just saying to him recently, I'm sick of turning on the TV. Everything I watch, it's like some, like, it's violence towards women. Like, somebody's murdered and everything, or attacked, or God, I'm just so over it. And I remember, like, I don't watch much TV anymore. I'll just hit Netflix or whatever. And the school was the first thing I kind of reverted back to the old box for, you know. And it was like, this is so refreshing. And I remember just walking away feeling good after watching it and feeling like that made me feel nice on the inside. How cute is that?
And I have to keep that in.
Half, yeah. Really?
Don't be cutting
that. It's a good ad.
I think that we need that. Like, as in, there's nothing, like, we all know that we could do, like, harder comedy or, like, harsher, you know, more
sensationalized,
kind of, or caustic humor or whatever. Okay. Obviously, we all have that capability, but that's not what Cahoots has really ever wanted to be. And the school ended up being this, like, kind of heartwarming family program. I'm not really sure that we were going that direction necessarily, but I'm certainly so glad that it did go that way. And, like,
and it seems to appeal to, like you know, from
kids.
A business point of view and from an arts point of view, it's very hard to bring out something that appeals to a cross market.
Yeah.
And it really did. It hit, like, young people giggled at it. Like, you know, there was really mature people were hooked on it.
Yeah.
You had your Mrs. Brown's Boys age.
Yeah, totally.
Target market there. It's just great to see it. Like,
I think we noticed that with our live stuff as well when we did a live tour last year, especially in St. Luke's. Like, the demographic was mixed, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, there's no particular, and people that come up to me regularly in Mahon Point, where I spend a lot of my time, Maternity Point, they're usually,
you wear your preggers.
Yeah, exactly. They're usually kind of like, you know, a lot of women in kind of my mom's age bracket, you know, or kind of maybe slightly younger, but, like,
yes,
they're definitely, they're not exactly who I would have thought I'd have been reaching.
Yes,
I am.
There's probably more of a challenge in trying to create something that's not dark or that doesn't have loads of curse. I mean, we've done sketches before where, say, like, in character or in the moment, I've done, like, a bit of cursing, and Dom might say, leave off the cursing. We'll do it for each other to kind of say,
yeah,
can we make it funny without making it? A lot of so-called dark stuff.
I know.
Kind of poor anyway. To be honest, you know what I mean?
I think it's more skillful to try and do it without. It, I mean, particularly with cursing, if you can be funny and never resort to kind of being too insulting towards people or cursing, then I think you're doing well.
I think Jerry Seinfeld famously like cursed once on stage and saw that he got a cheap laugh for it and never cursed
again.
And I've heard Will Smith talk about it as well, that that it is the harder road to go down to actually produce that kind of comedy.
Especially when we're doing improv as well. I always feel a bit cheap when I've just gone for, especially like the Improv Panther now again at Christmas, you know, it's a particular type of audience. When you go for like a big old swear just to get the laugh, you do come off going, oh, I'm a bit better than that, aren't I?
Oh,
We all do it, like, but it's, you know yourself, you earn a laugh more when you don't go there, like,
it probably
means more to you going forward.
Okay. My only experience in TV or film production was about 10 years ago. My friend and I took off up in the bus up to Dublin, and we were extras on The Tudors. We were extras who kept our clothes on. Were you?
Yeah.
No way.
I was. What was I?
Laura's elbow was in The Tudors.
Same as me.
I was a gutter snipe in the background, and you can see me. You can see me over. Like everyone else got these beautiful clothes on, I got this muck, and you see me in the background, like overacting, like. As in,
look at me. Look at me.
Somebody walked in, and I've like a jug of mead going. Oh. It's appalling.
Jug
appalling.
Of mead. But I
have
to say,
holding the jug of meat.
What season was that?
Oh God,
do you remember
know.
The episode three?
Was it season?
I don't know, but I remember like a bus collected us, and I remember seeing all the people waiting at the bus stop, and they were just the hairiest bunch of people I've ever seen in my life. And I was like, yeah, we're all going on The Tudors, are we? Okay, brilliant. There was so much hair in that bus.
We did the beheading of Anne Boleyn scene in Kilmainham Jail, and it was so cool to be part of it and to see it. But it ruined it for me. Like, I love theatre. I love cinema, and to just see it be made, I was like, oh, magic gone. And I know that it is such an interesting process, but as a viewer, I was like, oh, look, it's so fake, you know.
Yeah, well, especially something like that. But ours was only
the minutes,
drinking meat.
Like, what I could drink of meat. And I think in our scene there was like a swan that that Jonathan Rhys-Meyers had to eat out of.
Oh, Jonathan wasn't even there.
Get sick in a bucket.
Jonathan there was wasn't a different even guy there. There was, we were in the scene with Jonathan. Out, he wasn't even in it. And like, was Jonathan around? They were like, no, obviously not. Get away, gutter snipe.
But you know what I was fascinated about was how long it takes to make 3 minutes of TV. And the retakes and the stand-ins, and I just could not get over the detail and the continuity that has to be considered. And
that's why you want people around you that, first of all, you get on really well with, and second of all, you think are funny and it's interesting what they're doing. So I think we kind of stay interested with each other, that if you're on like the 14th take of something and it's a different angle, somebody might do a little lip here or there, or they might say something or turn their head in a different way, and it'll amuse
you. That could be it. Like,
Cause you have to keep yourself amused, I think. Throughout.
Definitely. Like, there's, I remember doing, like, at my first kind of bits of film work, I remember coming away going, oh my God, I'm all about theatre. Like, this is just ridiculous.
Because it's such a different experience.
I was having no crack. And then, like.
And you don't get feedback with an audience, you've instant feedback.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I think with the school in particular, and the minute we all started working together, I was like, oh my God, this is so much crack.
It just felt
like
right.
There's a picture of us, and we're not filming on the school, where I'm actually booking Teletubby tickets on my phone and Tyke's talking next to me, and it's in between takes, and I'm just roaring laughing, whereas another time you'd be bored out of your tree. But Tyke's like, what is she doing with her Teletubby tickets now in the middle of, like, I got her and telly, and all she cares about is the Teletubbies.
I think unusually as well, the way we work, we rarely do multiple takes. If somebody gets it the first time, then we just move on. And I think because of the style we're going for in terms of naturalism,
and the years of improv probably
helped. And the years of our improv experience, we just tend to move on. So it's rare for us to kind of keep going take after take.
If somebody laughs as well, if they keep it in, you get through the take and somebody laughs at what you've done, you know it's strong enough then. Like, they're the best judges. We're the best judges of each other, I think, most of the time. So you know you have it and just move on. Then
brilliant.
It doesn't get better on the third or fourth or fifth or sixth.
No.
Or
seven, and I think we said that as well about when you're making comedy, unless you're on the verge of laughing as an actor, then it's not... You're not doing the right thing, I think.
Yeah, you should be very near corpsing all the time, I think. Yeah.
You know you're in luck when your sound man, his boom is shaking because he's laughing so much. That was one great moment in our lives.
Oh, that's so, so good.
Ooh,
so,
Danny, I love you.
Oh, shout out to Danny.
I know, but I still love him.
We just still love Danny Crowley.
Can I ask as well, because I know that process is hard to get anything in front of the right people and to get the funding and to get the go-ahead for anything. Is that something you all get involved in, or is that primarily you, Tyke?
Well, Claire as well. Claire, our producer.
Shout out to Claire.
Yeah. Woo! She's sitting there long on
Claire does all the work and gets no praise.
She does, actually. Yeah. She does. She just organised the coffee morning almost single-handedly as well. In a
hey, I made three plates.
Laura showed a biscuit.
Three plates. Yeah.
She made a few biscuits.
He put €20 into the box, so I thought, let's not make a big deal of his spillage.
But Claire would be the primary person who liaises with RT or anyone else that we're in contact with.
Okay.
Yeah. So, sorry, what was your question again?
Getting involved in the process, like the right people.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I suppose we're all involved in trying to create stuff that we can kind of get in front of the right people. But like, apart from it, I suppose, as well as having a bit of luck that you get the right people on board.
Yeah.
Like, for a long time with RT, it's not as if like the whole of RT were mad about cahoots. Like, you know, nothing could be further from the truth, really. There's one guy up there, Eddie Doyle, who's left now, sadly, for BBC Northern Ireland.
Okay.
But he kind of, I think, picked up on us early on. And he's kind of a guy who champions stuff if he finds stuff that he likes.
And he really liked us.
Yeah. And
brilliant.
I think he really kind of just put us on the path then. You know,
and that's all it takes, is that one person to get in front of it.
You need one person in a strong position to really believe in you. So,
but you're never safe though, because then so we're still in a situation where we don't know if we have a season two of The School or not, because you're faced with new barriers then, really, like, as much as we think we probably will have, you're never on that kind of safe ground of definitely
have it. Can we start a season two The School campaign?
Absolutely.
I think it starts now. It starts tonight.
Let's do it. Let's hit the streets.
Yeah.
Well, we've started brainstorming ideas, and I'm going to start writing scripts. You might as well just believe it's happening anyway.
It just has to happen. Like,
and it will though.
We're optimistic.
Yeah. Good. Okay, so what so far, Dom, what have been your in your career, what have been the biggest challenges, and how have you kind of overcome them?
I suppose an initial challenge was, am I going to be able to do this for a living?
Or will I have to just keep modelling forever?
Will I just have to keep doing stock photography for the rest of my life? Which, of course, will be a wonderful job, and I would love to keep doing that for the rest of my life. But, I mean, it wasn't a very popular decision with my parents initially.
Okay. And this is interesting now for our listeners, because I think a lot of us may have come from homes where, you know, certain career paths were not traditional career paths. So it's interesting to hear.
And I'll preface it by saying that I totally understand why they felt like this, because
it came from a good place.
They're worried about, you know, are you going to be able to provide for yourself?
Yes.
Are you going to be able to feed yourself and pay your rent and all this type of stuff?
Of course.
You're on one career path that has nothing whatsoever to do with another career path, and suddenly you're deciding to completely change everything. So my father taught maths in UCC for 35 years.
Okay.
He's an extremely academic man. He values education and he likes stability as well. There was definitely a turning point where I did a panto in The Everyman and I was playing the woodcutter.
Okay.
And my father was travelling home on the bus. He doesn't drive either. And he was
doing your bit for the environment.
Exactly. I shouldn't own a car. He was sitting behind a father and a son, and his father and son had obviously been to see the panto, and the son was talking to the dad. And the dad asked him, who was your favourite character? And the son was like, the woodcutter.
Oh.
And my dad was just like bursting with pride. So he had to kind of tap him on the shoulder and go, that's actually my son who's there.
Yes.
So that was kind of a turning point in that he started to become proud of it. And then one of the most challenging things was probably playing Michael Collins, which I did a couple of years ago. Challenging from the perspective of, it was the first time I was kind of the proper lead in a theatre show where, like, there was one effective lead and that was me.
Big responsibility.
Yeah. The character I was playing, the volume of text that I had to learn.
That just blows my mind. I do not know how actors can learn so much lines. Like,
well, I've
that's our job though.
That's kind of our job.
Yeah. Do you know, people often say that to me and I'm like, but sure, that's my job.
I'm fascinated by
I never say to a teacher, like, you know, how do you do all that writing on whiteboards? Do you know what I mean? Like, as in, when people say, wow, I always think I've done badly if I come out of a play and somebody said, God, you did a lot of lines to learn. I'm always like, oh.
Well,
that's my job.
I'm fortunate in that reading is the way that I get information. So, genuinely. I'm
a big reader.
I'm an avid reader.
I
can actually visualise words on the page where they are.
Okay.
And the only time I would kind of slow down is when I'm going from one page to the next page. That's a kind of like a break in my mind that I have to help myself.
So you just need one giant page.
I need one massive page to be able to learn.
He doesn't try
scroll paper.
I asked the director, is there any way I could get it all on one sheet? But that was that was a challenging show for many reasons. And the biggest kind of the most nervous I was performing in the Gaiety to an almost capacity audience, and that was kind of nerve wracking. And it was a case of, well, you can either embrace it and up your game, or you can kind of let it overcome you. And okay. thankfully, I think I embraced it. So
face the fear, do
exactly,
it anyway.
There
like,
you go, Michael precisely.
Collins was actually at that one.
Sorry,
Michael Collins himself.
Michael
was
Collins
actually
was actually at it himself. Yeah,
he said it was brilliant.
96 years dead, and he managed to come see it.
He tweeted.
Yeah.
Big into the tweeting scene.
Exactly.
And Laura, what about you?
My challenges are my own fault, 100%. It's since I became a mom, it's the notion of guilt, really, and kind of not. You know, like, for example, if I'm working in Dublin, which has happened on occasion, having to be away from the kids for a few nights or whatever, that is like, my husband wouldn't bat an eyelid about that for himself, and he wouldn't bat an eyelid about it for me. But it's me that is the one going, oh God, I need to be with them 24/7, or how will they cope without me? Or,
and how old, for our listeners, are your smallest?
Sorry, Polly is 3 and Alfie is just 5 months. So they're, you know, it's relatively new, but I suppose that notion of like, it's my mom does any minding for me, or my husband, and I'm like, oh my God, do I need to get somebody that I pay to mind them to take away some of the guilt?
I know.
And then as well, like, there's a certain amount, like, if you're up in, if you're filming something in Dublin, you're quite likely in a hotel or a B&B, and you're sitting in the B&B, you're having a cup of tea, there isn't a little child staring at you, you're secretly thrilled. I got to watch a lot of Big Brother during the summer. I was like, this is amazing. But also, you're just very torn. And so, like, everything that comes up, like, if, you know, if any of the, if Claire, our producer, texts a date or a time, the first reaction is,
the
oh
kids.
God,
it's not you anymore.
It's
you
not
more
me
to
anymore,
think about.
And I still want this career. Do you
of
know
course.
What I mean? So I still, I want to be doing. Like, a lot of people are like, "Oh, Laura, you haven't done stand up in ages," and I'm like, I'm minding the kids, and there
I
should
know.
Be nothing wrong with that.
No.
And like, I can still go out at night and do my stand up gigs, but I might have no new material because I had no chance to write it during
yes.
the day or whatever. And I just feel they're small for such a short period of time, but they have
yes.
their births have coincided with the best part of my career,
wow.
like the most exciting part. So I have to run with both, but I'm always going to be torn with a bit of guilt. And everyone's like, get over it. And they're so right, but it's in my own head.
But I think we're probably, like, I'm my own biggest critic. My inner voice is probably the toughest thing on me.
Completely.
And since I became a mum, I guess you only have yourself to really worry about until you become
yeah.
a parent.
Yeah.
And the minute I became a mum, I was like, oh, so I can't just fly off and do that. And,
yeah.
and like that, you have to start saying no to things.
Definitely.
That
and
aren't
I
worthwhile.
Do regret, like, even, well, I don't really regret it. Like, I was very much this kind of person anyway, but like, there's stuff that I could have done when I didn't have kids, when I wasn't, we'll say tied down. I
yes.
don't in any way consider myself
tied
down. I don't in any way consider.
Still free as a bird.
Still free as a bird, but I do have places to be, like, but
a bird who's got somewhere to be.
I do have to mind these two people.
What a refreshing tied down attitude.
But like, there was loads of stuff, like, I was like, oh my God, even stuff like, why didn't I go to the cinema every night of the week? But
I
also
know.
Like, why didn't I like go up to Dublin and live there for a year? Well, of course I didn't, because my husband and boyfriend at the time or whatever was living in Cork, would have been weird.
So both your husband and your boyfriend, they're both living in Cork.
I've got two babies, and there's an husband and a boyfriend. But you know what I mean? So I'm like, I am in a constant battle with myself, but I also am like, well, just get over it, because sure, they
yeah.
don't care. Like, Polly and Alfie
they
don't care.
They do not.
And
no.
I want them to see, I want them to grow up and see that I didn't just go, right, that's my job and dreams and aspirations gone now.
Absolutely.
Because I just became your mother. It is my greatest joy in the world to be their mother, but I want them to be watching me on stage
yeah.
when they're old enough to go to our stuff.
That's
which brilliant. Will be never.
You've been pregnant during two of our biggest
absolutely.
Projects.
How cool is
absolutely.
That? Like, there's me and mom's belly. Like,
completely. Yeah. Like, and Polly was in a sketch. Polly had her first birthday when she was only 6 months old in a sketch. And like the other day, we were watching myself and Alfie were on the Today Show week.
That's
and
amazing.
Polly goes to me, when can I be on the television, Mammy? And I'm like, any minute now. Stage mom, I'm like, you'll be on Fesh Matthew next week if you're not careful. But like,
that's
I
fresh.
Want them to know that I had dreams, and that
yes.
I didn't, you know, that they can have it all.
Yes.
That they don't have to, like, they can have their cake and eat it.
And look, it wasn't that long ago that women had to, let alone
yeah.
children, when they got married, they had to give up work.
Absolutely.
End of story.
And actually, my job is really flexible.
Yeah.
Because, like, we mightn't, you know, be filming, we might film for 3 days and then not film for 3 months. So actually, that's only really asking someone to babysit for 3 days. So it's just get over yourself and get on with it. But I also feel the pressure to look like I'm, like, totally in control of everything. So, like, I've brought them to radio interviews and everything, and people are like, wow, Laura, you're so relaxed. I'm like, yeah, inside I'm dying.
Yeah.
I'm too warm. I'm too warm all the time. So, like, I give this impression of, like,
wow.
working mom, got my kids, got my career, I'm so amazing. And then Shane,
my
husband.
Got my husband.
Shane, my only husband, has to pick up the pieces on a Saturday when I'm like, we watch too much Netflix, what am I doing? And he's just like, you're gone crazy.
I know, but it is, the struggle is real. And it is, you know, I think we probably are in different times in that whether you're a stay-at-home dad or stay-at-home mom,
yeah,
everyone has a side hustle. Everyone has something else that they do, yeah, an interest, a job, whatever. And I think we're lucky to be in times where we can, if we really put our mind to it, do what we want to do.
And I do think that we also suffer from social media, because if there's like a moment at home where I get to go to the loo on my own, bring my phone in with me, and then there's all these Instagram posts of like,
perfect,
you know,
lives,
like famous people, like we'll say Vogue Williams at the moment is like 15 weeks pregnant, she's giving it socks in the gym, and I'm like, I don't, yeah, think I'm going to see a gym, yeah, until my kids are doing their leaving cert. And
know,
so then you're inside the loo going, Jesus, I must go out now and I'm going to run around the kitchen, and there's so much pressure. Or there's like, you know, natural mother and she's made all this food from scratch, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to go out, I'm going to put pasta, and I'm going to put the pasta in it. There's so much pressure when you see all this stuff
cooking the pound and
I'm guilty,
lifting the dump.
I'm totally guilty of that as well. Like if Polly and Alfie were here now, I'd have these like casual pictures of them posing with the microphone as if I wasn't like stressed off my,
yeah,
face,
they weren't breaking,
bringing
the place
them in
apart,
the thing, yeah, yeah, exactly. It is all a myth, like, but I find it hard,
but
to believe
the thing,
that it's a myth.
But younger people, unfortunately, like I do think that the generations behind us are getting a bit too much flack, because,
yeah, yeah,
they have so much more to contend with. I'm so happy social media wasn't there when I was out clubbing,
so
and
grateful,
finding,
yeah,
my way in life and that. But you know, now, you know, like I was saying in the last episode, like you go onto Instagram now, everything's filtered to,
yeah,
look perfect.
Yeah.
People are conforming to like, you know, you look at yoga, for example, you have to be a size 8 and have a 6-pack and,
yeah,
turn upside down.
It's never going to happen.
That's
like,
not reality. And that's not the old class I go to.
But like when I was 16, I had glitter all over my face because I thought, yes, glitter eyeshadow was class.
Like blue,
right,
lipstick.
Yeah. And I thought, what, it was unbelievable. And like, I wouldn't have put a filter on that. I'd have been like, I'm unreal.
Yeah. Well, that was the original way to put a filter on, was to cover yourself in glitter. Yeah,
yeah. But I think our children, like my age, people that are having children, I feel like it's going to go the other way, that like I haven't a notion of Polly being, or
no,
Alfie
way,
being on Facebook or whatever.
No.
Like I feel like I'll be able to protect them, because unfortunately the kids that are like teenagers now and stuff are living through the worst of it.
Yes.
We'll realise the effects of it. Like I realise them already,
yep,
as I'm passing it on to my kids. Do you,
yep,
know what I mean?
Yep.
And I'm already trying to put the phone away more, so I'm not like on the phone in front of them,
yes,
all the time and all this. Or sometimes he's probably playing games where she's like, I must send a message. And I'm like,
I know. My 3-year-old was like, I was on the couch a couple of months ago and I was sending emails, and my 3-year-old just came up and hit the phone out of my hand and went, put away your phone,
oh,
mom.
No.
And
oh,
that,
yeah,
for me was the moment, yeah, of, no, this,
yeah,
is not worth,
no,
it. Like,
no, it's
my
not.
3-year-old had to teach me a lesson. I was like, yeah, this is not okay. I don't want her to remember me as being
behind,
like, yeah, love,
phone,
I'll be with you there in one,
yeah,
second. Like, that's not, yeah, cool at all. So yeah, I think, but then there's the positive side of social media from, I guess, a reaching people point of view, from a PR point of view. Has it helped you guys spread the word about Cahoots?
Yeah.
Is it,
yeah,
something that you sit down, or is this Claire's job maybe, to sit down and go, okay, so we have, you know, something coming up, we need to put a plan together to kind of market this?
That's on the challenges as well. Like, that's another challenge, I suppose, that, like, because myself and Claire are doing this full time for a while now, and like, I'm not taking other, I'm not pursuing other acting work or stuff like that, so it's your full time thing. So the thing that's a challenge is that, like, you know, the more you work, the better your company is doing. And that's kind of tough, because like theoretically then you should be working 14 hours a day,
yeah,
and then you'll go crazy and you don't see your family and stuff,
yeah.
So that's the challenge, you know, that, but like definitely with the social media, like the more you work it, the more it works for you, so it's kind of frustrating. Yeah, definitely. I look at guys who are on there and they mightn't have done stuff with RT or whatever, and they don't need it. Like, they,
yeah,
have fan bases, they do their shows, and whether you think their stuff is strong or not is kind of irrelevant really, because if you're like, we're self-employed, so we're trying,
yep,
to make a business for ourselves. If those guys are touring around the UK and Ireland and stuff, fair play to them, like, you,
yep,
know. So,
and I think YouTube has changed things as well, you know, like everyone's a broadcaster now. If you've got a smartphone device, you can broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
You have your platform and off you go. But YouTube has been great for so many different, I guess, not just comedy, for music, for everything, that you still have a place to put it out there.
Well, it's been great in a way, in that there is now an avenue for you to put your stuff out there, but it's also made it difficult to actually get your stuff noticed.
Yeah, yeah,
because there is such a volume of
so much
material.
Noise.
Yeah.
Plus, if you looked at our YouTube channel, you'd think that we were absolute nobodies, which we got, you know, like, because there's like,
Johnny now needs to get on that.
Johnny,
get on this.
Because there's like, you know, 56 views on YouTube, but there could be loads on Facebook.
20,000 on Facebook.
Yes.
Well, Facebook has been fantastic for us in that that's pretty much how we've generated most of our fan base is through Facebook. So,
Okay.
It is useful in moderation.
I'm big in social media.
I love social media. Just about.
And if we have anyone listening to this podcast who, for example, you know, might feel that they would love to work in the comedy field, and like that, maybe Dom, they're from a background where, you know, maybe nobody at home has worked in comedy before or in performing arts or anything, and they just don't know how to go about it. How would you advise them, you know, if it's just a student at home listening to this and they're like, I would absolutely love to do that, and I think I would be bloody good at it too, but I don't know where to start. What should they do?
Well, I don't like to go through any interview without mentioning Conor McGregor, so I'm just going to mention him now.
We'll get him out of the way.
I think his blatant belief in his abilities, whatever about anything else going on with him, but his belief in himself, like if he
visualizes it and he just visualizes it,
he makes it happen, he 100% believes it's going to happen. I think with acting or comedy, you just have to go for it. And I heard somebody say, I think it was Paloma Faith said the other day.
I love her.
I was a bit dubious about it, but she said that her best advice would be to take both compliments and criticism with a grain of salt. And I think that's true as well. Hold your own belief in yourself.
Yeah.
Don't be influenced either way by like people thinking you're great or people thinking you're terrible. You kind of plow your own path and go for it.
Brilliant.
And also, I don't think you have to train up to the hilt to do acting or comedy, especially with comedy. I'm a bit dubious about whether you can teach comedy or not. I think you go out and you try it.
Okay.
And that would be my feeling on it.
Yeah, I think like with an awful lot of things, you know, you can study as much as you want, but it's about getting out there and doing
practical,
it and putting in the welly, like, and really, really doing the work. Any other?
I was just going to say, the best thing in terms of preparation that I can do, either for acting, straight acting, or for comedy, is just pay attention all the time.
Okay.
To the entire world around
you. There's material around you all the time.
Absolutely everywhere. And comedy, for me, is about linking things together. Okay. Linking things that two people might not necessarily think are connected can often be extremely funny. And, you know, any character you're preparing from is always drawn from real life, and you're always getting inspiration from people around you. I mean, just people watching, sitting in a coffee shop and listening to all these voices around you. That's where all your inspiration comes from.
Brilliant.
Yeah. You don't need any other source. And it's beautiful being in a scenario where you can kind of, it sounds like I'm a stalker now, but you can discreetly observe people being themselves.
Yeah, okay.
So they're not being affected in any way. They're just being totally natural. Mm. And that's when you can truly kind of observe and learn what it is to be natural.
That's what I love.
You see, when you're on the bus, you don't have to pay attention to the road. You can just listen to all these people.
If there's anyone listening that's in school or whatever and is like getting bogged down by the world or whatever, I'm trying to think about this with regards to my kids. If you can just hold the belief that school or whatever is only one tiny, tiny part of the whole of your life, that you can get over it and suddenly your real life will start. Do you know what I mean? I'm not in contact with anyone that was in secondary school with me.
Yep.
I'm like, good luck to you. But do you know what I mean? My best friends and everything and all of that, we've been very black and white.
Ditch your school friends.
Get away from them. But all of my best friends and everything happened post school and all career stuff. And like, just keep your eyes on the bigger picture. Don't get bogged down by small shit that's happening.
Work hard, I would say, as well. Work, like, you've already touched on it, but that'd be my big, like, if you want to do comedy, like, you've chosen a crazy off the wall path, fair play to you, but then work really hard at it.
Yeah,
because there's a lot of friends I can think of and they're like hilarious. Like, I know loads of people that are funny, but you have to go away and write up your sketch. You can't just have a great idea for a sketch and then 10 years later
it doesn't happen.
Nobody's going to call at your door. But if you work hard, so you find
commit
yourself
going to it.
Up doing stand up and you're doing your material, but you've worked so hard that you've rehearsed it so much, you then start to calm down. It's all about work.
I think there's an overemphasis on talent. I think it's much more about putting in the hours.
I love that. Yeah. Because I think we're in a society today where everyone wants to be, it's the ego is driving everything, and it's all about the likes and the popularity. And and I think we are all trying to be something, but we're already something, and you're enough, and just do what you do. But that's
Different. We're all something different as well. Yes. And also, I think in acting, straight acting, where you're going for ads and all that, if you don't look the part, you're not getting it. And that doesn't necessarily mean necessarily mean that you have to be like a stick or anything. Like, as in, if you don't, if you're going for a part for like, Which part? Stick. A part that I've been offered recently was a kind of a downtrodden, rather large mother. Now I could have gotten that, but like that's a very specific look. So don't get bogged down on the looks aspect covered of things. Just
you might not be right.
You're
for
just
that
not right
thing,
for the part. Yeah. And I've auditioned people, and like sure, Dom did a terrible audition, but he got it because he looked right for the part.
Okay,
and look at the nice. Drop you, goal.
Exactly. You created a terrible.
You've learned
monster.
Him well.
Haven't yeah. I? Don't tell Diz.
I won't. It's all Laura's
science.
Fault. It's all Laura's fault.
So, guys, individually, what are you all looking forward to the most for the rest of the year?
Well, for me, if we get the school recommissioned, which I'm very confident we will.
Conor McGregor.
When we get the school recommissioned, I'm looking forward to filming that. And I'm also looking forward to filming the second series of The Young Offenders.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I am looking forward to getting back to stand up. And to the school, which will definitely happen. And meeting Conor McGregor, yes. Which is also going to happen, I think, on Friday.
It's happening. Well,
good Friday.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
On Good Friday.
Going to meet him at a bit of mass.
It's going to be a great Friday.
Man point.
The school. I am going to develop my first full stand-up show this year. That's
amazing.
A fact. I'm going to say that now, so I'll force myself to do it.
Has to be done.
Am I in that? No. No.
Can you write me into that as well?
No. I'll write you short and sweet eventually.
Oh, thank you.
No.
Okay.
Our stuff getting stronger. Because I think even our own sketches are going to get that little bit stronger and more thoroughgoing.
It doesn't kill
you,
makes you strong.
Keep working hard, kids.
Don't take mushrooms.
No.
Unless you're in a stir fry that your mum makes, you can have them.
So, can people reach out to you guys? Or
God,
Claire?
Don't come near me. Don't touch me.
Laura, no.
Laura, definitely.
Yeah.
I'm totally me. I'm very friendly.
If she didn't drive, she'd be on the bus full time.
And there's a lot of stuff, isn't there, on your website, actually, Claire?
Yeah, time.
Good
one. We're very welcoming. Get on to us.
Oh, we're a sound old bunch. Oh,
we do respond to everything.
No, Dom stays in character, so he might not come across like super friendly when you meet him, but...
Which character?
He's the only character who claims in everything.
He's very samey.
That kind of stern.
Civil servant.
Yeah.
Who said that to you recently?
Dahi.
Oh, yeah.
Dahi O'Shea.
Yeah, I'm just name dropping Dahi O'Shea there.
Oh, you're
Dahi said to
best
you.
Buds. Best
yeah, exactly.
Buds. Well, guys, it was such a pleasure to have you, and thank you so much for joining us here on the podcast, on the Be Positive podcast. This has been our Be Funny episode. I hope you had a chuckle at home or wherever you are today. Thank you for joining us, and a huge, huge thank you to Tyke, to Laura, and to Dom from Cahoots.
Very well.
Thank you.